Okay, so we are on the bottom of Daf Yud Ches Amid Beis. We are with three lines from the bottom. In Shabbos, Daf Yud Ches Amid Beis, three lines from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan, Beis Shammai Omer, Beis Shammai say, Lo Yimkar Adam Chem Tzol Lidach, your person cannot sell his chametz to a non-Jew. Elam Kin Yodea Sheyichle Kodem HaPesach, unless you know that the chametz will be consumed before Pesach. Divrei Beis Shammai, this is the opinion of Beis Shammai, because according to Beis Shammai, the mitzvah of bir chametz, of destroying the chametz, is to get rid of it from the world. Well, Beis Hillel, Omer, Beis Hillel disagree. We don't hold like Beis Shammai, we hold like Beis Hillel, because Beis Hillel, Omer, Beis Hillel say, Kol zman shemuter l'ochlo, muter gam l'machro. As long as you're allowed to eat the chametz in Erev Pesach, you're also allowed to sell it, even if the chametz remains in the reshus, in the domain of the non-Jew. It is, he can do that, it can remain the reshus in the domain of the non-Jew on Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda says, top of New Testament Aleph, Kutach HaBavli, so Kutach HaBavli is a type of food that the Babylonians ate that was made, there's like a dip, to dip bread and other things. But kol mine kutach osur limkor shoshiyom koma pesach. He says that you're not allowed to sell this kutach habavli 30 days before Pesach. Why? Because when they made this kutach, they put little crumbs of bread, and since they didn't eat it at once, but they would dip it bit by bit, it would not be consumed for a long time, and one should be concerned that you might leave it over in the hands of the Nachri on Pesach. So obviously he's holding like Beis Shammai. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara. The Gemara says, it cites the Braisa. Tana Rabbanan, no steam is those from the Akela Bechatzer. You're allowed to give food in front of your dog in the courtyard. Not lo v'yatza in his cocking lo. The dog now goes out to Rishus HaRabim. That's fine. It's not. We don't have to stop the dog from going out to Rishus HaRabim. Kiyotzi, both similar to this. No steam mizonos lifnei hanachri bechatzer. You can give food to a non-Jew in a courtyard as well. And not lo v'yatzei in his kalkula, but also if he takes it and he goes out and he goes outside, then also we are not concerned. We're not concerned about that either. So the Gemara asks, "How to lovely? Why do we need both examples? Hayduhach, it's the same thing." So Maudatema, hi Rami Alev, hi Lo Rami Alev. You might think that the dog is—it's incumbent upon the person to feed the dog, and therefore he is allowed to put food in front of the dog, and you don't care if it goes out to Rishus HaRabim with the food, takes the food out to Rishus HaRabim, but when it comes to the Nachri, the non-Jew, lo rami alai, it's not, there's no responsibility that Jew has to feed the non-Jew, and therefore maybe you cannot give the non-Jew food on Shabbos. Kamash Balan, comes the Gemara, comes the Bryce and tells you that even though the feeding of the non-Jew is not a responsibility on the Jew, nevertheless, the Jew is allowed to give, to place food in front of the non-Jew in the courtyard. The Braisa now is dealing with other types of involvements with the non-Jew on Erev Pesach. So this is about six lines down in your Testament. Now, Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis teach, Lo Yaskir Adam Kelev Nachri Erev Shabbos. A person should not rent out his vessels to a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. Why? Because it appears that he's renting it to the non-Jew to be used on Shabbos. But you're allowed to rent on Wednesday or Thursday, even though the non-Jew may use it on Shabbos, because it doesn't give off the appearance. Kayotzebo, similar to this, Ein Mishalchim Igros Biyad Nachri Be'erev Shabbos. We don't send letters with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. We're going to see later on in the daf, you know, what types of mail is permitted on Erev Shabbos, but at least on the surface right now, we don't send letters to a non-Jewish messenger on Erev Shabbos, because it seems that what are you going to do? He's going to be carrying the letter and on your behalf on Shabbos, so it seems like he's your agent. But Reviv Chamishi Mutter, similarly on Wednesday or Thursday, it's permitted. Amru Lav Al Rabbi Yossi HaKohe, V'Amri La Al Yossi HaChassid, Shalanibsa Ksav Yado B'Yad Nachri Ba'olav. So this Rabbi Yehuda Kohen, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, never had any letters from him go to a non-Jew at all. so that the non-Jew should not take it on Shabbos. So the Tana Rabbanan. Now we're going to discuss this issue of sending letters with a non-Jew before Shabbos. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Mishalchim Igeres Biadochi Erev Shabbos Elam Kein Kotzitz Lo Davim. We do not send letters to a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos unless you sort of fix the price of delivery before Shabbos, because then the non-Jew is not doing it as a Jew's agent. So this is like a distinction in terms of when a non-Jew is allowed to act and doing the work of a Jew. A non-Jew is not allowed to be the agent of a Jew on Shabbos, right? You can't be a shaliach of a Jew on Shabbos, okay? But a non-Jew can do things for his own sake. He was called a daiti denavshe. He can do things that he feels for his own sake, not acting on the Jew's behalf. A non-Jew cannot hire himself out and do malacha on Shabbos for a Jew. If the Jew hires him on this day on Shabbos, I'm going to pay you to be my worker, and you'll do whatever I tell you, and you're going to get paid today. So that he is the
stamp on instead of paying the fee.
I'm sorry?
Just putting a stamp on.
No, no, because when you put the stamp on, that's like being kotzeitz damim. That basically you paid the fee, and then he has a job. He does. His job is not to bring it on Shabbos. His job is to you're fixing the price, and then he's not your agent anymore. He's doing it because he wants to get his schar. He wants to get his. You already fixed the price, so whenever he does it, that's up to him. It's not like you're telling him, "I want you to deliver it on Shabbos." You're telling him, "Here's a stamp. You know, this is the cost of the job, as opposed to doing it on Shabbos." That's the
idea. Is that like giving it to Pete the mechanic that he can do it anytime he wants?
Yeah. So that's a daiti denavshe, right? That's a job as opposed to here. This is a service. Meishamei omrim kadesh yagia lebeiso beisilomim kadesh yagia lebeis asabach lachoba. Beishabai, and the Braisa brings the Beishabai Beisil's opinion. Now, by the way, the Gemara is going to spend some time and try to understand how Beishabai Beisil's opinion relates to the first statement of the Braisa. But the second statement has this debate between Beishabai and Beisil about sending a letter. Beishabai said he has to reach his house before Shabbos, or there has to be enough time for him to reach his house before Shabbos. Beisil says, no, there has to be enough time for him to reach the house that's closest to the wall where he sent him, the wall of the city where he sent it to there. Again, we're going to try to, now the Gemara is going to try to explain the Braisa, because that it seems that Beisham and Beis Hillel are arguing even in a situation where he fixed the price already. So the Gemara, that's what the Gemara asked, but lo katzatz, didn't he fix the price? So once you fix the price, then the non-Jew is not doing anything for the Jew, but he's doing it in order to receive his money. He fixed the price. I'm going to give you the dollar for mailing this package. So now, whenever the non-Jew does it, the non-Jew is doing it to receive his reward and not as an agent of the Jew anymore. Omar Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes answers, "Hachi kamar." This is what the Braisa means to say. Im lo katzatz, that he's saying, if they didn't fix the price, then Beishamor mimachigi lebeis, so Beisil mimachigi lebeis hasamach lachoma. If they didn't fix the price, so then you can't send it. You can't send a letter on Erev Shabbos unless there's time for the person to reach, the non-Jew to reach his house, or Beis Hillel says until he reaches the house that's closest to the wall of the city. So the Gemara asks, wait a second. Va'amart Reisha, the first half of the Braisa says Ein Mishalchim, flat statement, just a basic statement. You cannot send a letter in the hands of a Jew, a non-Jew, unless you fix the price. So that seems to be regardless of whether he can reach his house, not reach his house. So how do you sort of reconcile that with the way we're trying to understand this debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? So the Gemara answers lo kasha. It's not a question. Ha, de kavia be davar b'masa. Behold, lo kavia be davar b'masa. The seifa of the Braisa, the last part of the Braisa that allows you to send a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos, even if he didn't fix the price, if he can reach the city while it's still day, is discussing a case where the ruler, to whom the letter is designated, lives permanently in that city. And the reisha of the brisa, the first part of the brisa that forbids you to send a letter in the hands of a non-Jew and Arab Shabbos if he didn't fix the price, is discussing a situation where the ruler of the town that does not have a fixed place in the city, but sometimes he goes to a different city. In other words, the intent of the Gemara is like this. A person is allowed to send a letter in the hands of a non-Jew and Arab Shabbos to a person who lives in a different city if the one who receives the letter lives in that town permanently, and there is time for the messenger to reach that house before Shabbos, even if he didn't fix the price, because the non-Jew can finish his job before Shabbos, and he won't be the shaliach, the agent of the Jew on Shabbos. However, if the receiver of the letter does not live permanently in that city, then there's a concern that the Jew's agent, the non-Jew who's sending the letter, will not find his house immediately, and he'll need to go maybe to another city on Shabbos, and therefore he will be his agent on Shabbos. And therefore, we don't allow you to send a letter in the hands of a non-Jew and Arab Shabbos unless, right, even if there's time to reach the house before Shabbos, unless he fixed the price. And by the way, this Gemara, when the Gemara gives this answer, this is just simply an example that people typically sent letters to rulers, and therefore the Gemara says that if you send a letter to the ruler, that you need to make sure the ruler is living permanently in that city. But this would apply even if you're sending it to your friend as well. Okay, so now the Gemara now discusses about going on a cruise or taking a boat before Shabbos during the week. Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis teach, Ein mafligim b'sfina pachos mishlosh yom kodem l'Shabbos. You shouldn't go on a cruise leaving, it seems, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. You should only go Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. B'medvar amurim, when do we say this? L'dvar harishus. That's only, like I said, a cruise. A davar rishus. You're going for a matter that is permitted. Avot lidvar mitzvah shapir dami. But if you're going for some kind of mitzvah, then you can leave either Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. You can even leave on Erev Shabbos. There are a whole host of reasons why you're not allowed to go on a boat, why they made this gezeira. You shouldn't go on a boat 3 days before. One reason is because you're going to get seasick. It's a bittul of mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos if you leave 3 days before. So perhaps nowadays our boats are different. There are other opinions that say that if you travel by boat, that's a sakana, that's a danger. And there are times that you need to be mechal on Shabbos. So the question is, at what point are you concerned about being mechal on Shabbos for the upcoming week? That's starting from Wednesday. In other words, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, you can start an activity, and you don't have to worry about potential chilul Shabbos on the upcoming Shabbos. This is the Baal HaMa'or's opinion, for example. But on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, you have to be concerned about doing something, let's say for Dvar Rishus, for something that's optional, on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday that you might have to violate for the coming Shabbos. Tosfos says that just like, Tosfos says that just like they said, you can't go swimming because you might build a raft. So too, it's based on this also, on Shabbos. There are about five or six different reasons, and the post.
Rabbi Tosfos is adding that even in the Tchum you can't do it.
Right, because the issue of building, it's a building a raft, right. So there are a whole host of reasons, and the postgame discuss whether to what extent those reasons apply nowadays by taking a cruise. Okay, so Uposeg Ibo. So the Jew needs to, I think we try to be strict if we can. Posek Ibo, the Jew needs to make a condition with the boat, the person who runs the boat. Al Menas Lishbos. He should tell the guy who's in charge of the boat, stop the boat on Shabbos. And Ve'eno Shoves. And if he doesn't stop, that's okay. You don't have to worry about it. Divrei Rebbe, that's the opinion of Rebbe. As long as you said, as long as you made your intent known that you don't want the boat to go on Shabbos, so then we're not concerned if he doesn't listen to you. The Jew doesn't have to do this. Okay. Now, min hatzor litzidon afilu be'erev Shabbos mutar. If you're traveling from Tzor to Tzidon, two cities in the coast, western coast, you know, from Tzor to Tzidon, so there you're allowed to travel because then you can reach there before Shabbos. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis teach, ein tzorin al yara shel nachrim pachlim mishol shem kolam Shabbos. You're not allowed to lay siege on a city of non-Jews less than 3 days before Shabbos. V'mischilu ein mafsikin. And if you start, we're talking about here a melchemes rishus, an optional war, not a war, not a melchemes mitzvah, or a melchemes chova. We're not talking about a defensive war, a war that's a mitzvah. We're talking about an optional war. You shouldn't lay siege more than 3 days before Shabbos, presumably for the same reason, because of the bitzel mitzvahs oneg Shabbos. You're going to be, that's what the Rif says, that in the first 3 days of war, the people who are waging war, they generally don't eat or drink because they are so burdened about laying siege. You could be laying siege for a long time. So the first 3 days, you're the most nervous. So if you know, once you start it, then you can just relax when you're laying siege. So don't do it the first 3 days. The Baal HaMor says is because, again, you're putting yourself into a sakana, into a danger. And you shouldn't put yourself in a danger situation less than 3 days before Shabbos. You only have to worry about potential chilul Shabbos on 3 days before Shabbos. But if you did lay siege, we don't stop it. V'cheinu Yeshamai Omer, and similarly Shammai said, Ad Ridita Afilu B'Shabbos. Says that you're allowed to lay a siege. He's saying the pasuk, and even on Shabbos you can continue to lay siege until you conquer the city. Amar Shimon Gamliel no hagim hoyu. So Shimon Gamliel said that his father's house would give clothing to a non-Jewish launderer 3 days before Shabbos, so he wouldn't do work on Shabbos. Tanya Amar Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok said kachaya min hagol shabbos Shimon Gamliel. This was the custom of the house of Rabbi Gamliel. She noticed him clay lava on lakovei shlosha yom kol Shabbos. He would give white clothing to launderer 3 days before Shabbos because that was very difficult. Because right, you had to bleach the clothing and you had to make it really white. So that took a long time. Utvuim afil be'erev Shabbos, but colored clothing apparently that is not as difficult to launder, and the non-Jew can do the work even on one day's notice. So the fact that he gave the white clothing 3 days before and the colored clothing 1 day before, so obviously he wasn't showing you that the launder, in case you want to go into laundry business, now you know, to at least in Talmudic times, the white clothing is more difficult to launder than colored clothing. Abaye would give colored clothing to a launderer to launder. Amar le kama bois I love. How much money do you want for this clothing? Amar le, the launderer said to Baye, kide chivara, the same price that you give to launder white clothing. Amar le kvar kedabuch rabbanon. He says no. He said the rabbis already preceded your statement that we learned that laundering white clothing is far more difficult than colored clothing, and therefore I shouldn't pay you the same amount for colored clothing than white clothing. Amar Abaye said, "Hi, man, do you have money like katsara? Someone who gives clothing to someone to launder it. B'mishcha nesev lei. He should measure the clothing before he gives it over. U'v'mishcha nikshkomine, and he should measure the clothing when he gets it back. Itfe afste demaschei." Because if now the clothing looks, if it measures, it's longer, if its dimensions are greater, then obviously the launderer ruined it because he stretched it out. V batzer, and if it's a shorter the cloak or whatever it is, it's shorter, the dimensions are smaller. Afsade de kautze, Then what happened? Then the clothing got shrunk. So this is a problem when you're giving clothes to laundry. Make sure it doesn't get stretched or that it gets shrunk. Okay, good, helpful advice. Now, the Mishnah says, V'shavin elu v'elu shetonim. Even Beis Shammai agrees that you're allowed to leave a beam in an olive press or a wine press to smash the or to be on top of the grapes or the olives, as the case may be, and so that the juice comes out even on Shabbos. So Maishna Kula, why is this different than everything else? Why is Beis Shammai lenient on this case? The Gazur Beis Shammai Maishna Kros Beis Bavigulei Hagas Lo Gazur. Why does Beis Shammai make a decree in all other situations that they shouldn't start the malacha, the work on Erev Shabbos, so that it will finish the work will finish by itself on Shabbos? And why is these beams on the olive press or the wine press, they did not make such a decree? So the Gemara clarifies, Hanach, these malachos that were these actions that were mentioned in the Mishnah, the Avid Luhu B'Shabbos Michayev Chatas, that if you would do it yourself on Shabbos, you would be liable for a Korban Chatas, all the other cases of the Mishnah. So Gazru, obviously, if you did it unintentionally, you'd be liable for a Korban Chatas, so that there would be a Torah prohibition. So in all those cases, Gazru Bu, Beis Shammai, Erev Shabbos, Simcha Sheicha. So Beis Shammai made a decree that it was forbidden, even Erev Shabbos, close to dark, that you shouldn't start it before Shabbos. But Koros Beis Habad, Bigulei Agas, but placing these heavy boards of the olive press or the wine press on top of the grapes or the olives, the case may be, the Avid Lohu B'Shabbos, if you would do that on Shabbos, Lo Machayev Chatas, you would not be liable for a Korban Chatas, Lo Gazru, they didn't make the decree on Erev Shabbos. Why would you not be Chayev A Korban Chatas? So even though squeezing the juice from olives and grapes, there is, it is considered an Av Malacha, that only applies when you didn't squeeze them while it was still day. That in other words, let's say you have a grape and an olive that you've already squeezed it, that you haven't squeezed it, and you squeeze it for the first time on Shabbos, so then you would violate the Torah prohibition of schita, which is a derivative of dash, of threshing. However, here, when you're placing the board, it's not the way to place a board on olives until you grind them first. So there, even if you hadn't placed the board, that once you crush the grapes or the olives, so the liquid's going to spill out by itself. So what you're doing by placing the board, you are speeding up the process. But since you already crushed the olives, the grapes, as the case may be, what you're doing now by placing the board on it let's say if you do it on Shabbos, that would not be a Torah prohibition. So since that would not be a Torah prohibition, Beis Shammai said that if you place an Erev Shabbos, we're not going to make the gzeira, the decree. So the Gemara says, Man Tana dechomidi da'asim emele shaper dabe. Who is the Tana who holds that anything that in the future will happen by itself? Right? That's our case. That the grapes or the olives, the juice will come out by itself in any case. So who's the Tana who holds that in this case, that if it would come up by itself, then there's no Torah prohibition on Shabbos. So I'm Rav Yossi Brav Chanina. Rav Yossi Brav Chanina says that this is the opinion of Rav Yishmael, Ditnan, that says what? Hashum va-boser va-melilos. So you have garlic or grapes that are not ripened or different, I guess, stalks of wheat that are not fully ripened. If you crush them while it's still before Shabbos, and you want to put a board on them now that it will continue, I guess the liquid will continue to flow on Shabbos. You are allowed to place the board on while it's still day. But Rabbi Akiva says, Lo Yigmor, you can't finish the job. So we see from here, Rabbi Shmuel says that when you squeeze on Shabbos the garlic or the unripened grapes that were crushed on Erev Shabbos, you're not be chayv a korban chatas, and therefore he allows you lechatchila, ideally, to place the board on Friday. And this is what Beis Shammai holds in our Mishnah. The Rabbi Lazar, now we're obviously now in New Testament Beis, the first line. Rabbi Lazar Amar, Rabbi Elazar says, Rabbi Elazar, so by the way, it's Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas, that's what Rashi says that the author of Mishnah is Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, the Tana. That he's the one who holds like this. Didnan, because we learn the Mishnah, Chalos Dvash, Shariskan Be'er of Shabbos, Yotzim, Yatzim, Aser, Rabbi Elazar Matir. If you have cakes of, or loaves of honey that you crushed on Erev Shabbos, and the honey flows from it on Shabbos, you cannot eat the honey on Shabbos, because we're concerned that if we allow you to eat the honey, that you might squeeze it on Shabbos, and that would be a Torah prohibition. That is the Tanakhama's opinion. Rabbi Elazar Matir. Rabbi Elazar allows you to eat the honey that flows from the honey cakes or the on Shabbos, and we don't make a decree. Why? Because he says that, let's say you forget and you squeeze the honey cakes because you want to have more honey coming out, that would only be a rabbinic prohibition to begin with, so we're not going to make a double gzeira on a gzeira. Right? So we see from here, from Rabbi Elazar, that anything that comes out from itself, there's no Torah prohibition of schita, mina Torah, and this is, this opinion is what Beis Shammai holds in our Mishnah, and therefore, you can place this beam on top of olives or grapes on Erev Shabbos so that the liquid should flow from it on Shabbos. Because even if you would squeeze it on Shabbos itself, you would not be liable for a Korban Chatas. And the Gemara is going to explain why each of the Amoraim did not like the other opinion, right? We had one Mishnah which talked about the garlic and the unripened grapes, or we had that Mishnah, and then we had the honey Mishnah. So one Amora used one as a support, and one used the other as a support. One didn't either like the other opinion. That's the assumption of the Gemara here. So the Gemara starts off and says, "Yosi Bar Chanina." Yosi Bar Chanina says that our Mishnah Beis Shammai, who said you could place the board on top of the olive or the grapes on Erev Shabbos, because there's no violation if you were to put it, there's no Torah violation if you were to put the beam on Shabbos itself. This holds like Rabbi Yishmael, my Tamar lo Amar, ki Rabbi Elazar. Why didn't he like the Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar with the honey? So the Gemara explains, Amar lach, Rabbi Yosef Rechidi could tell you, Hasam there by the honey cakes. Who the Beikara Ochelos of Ochel? That's different. Because initially, the honey, when it was in the honey loaves, so that was food. And now when it leaves, it's still called food. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar holds that even if you squeeze it on Shabbos, there's no Torah prohibition, because there's no schita when you remove food from food. There's only a prohibition when you squeeze liquid from a food. If you squeeze food from a food, right? If you're mafrid ochel mi ochel, it's only an issue when you squeeze olive oil from olives. That's a Torah prohibition. Or grape juice from grapes, wine from grapes. That is a prohibition when you're squeezing liquid from a solid. But if you squeeze a solid from a solid, that's not called schita. So he defines honey as a solid, as an ochel, and therefore that's the reason why you'd be permitted to eat the honey on Shabbos. But hocha, but meikara ochel v'hashtamashke. But with the olives and the grapes, initially it was food, and then the liquid becomes, then the oil, the olive oil, the wine comes out, so that obviously is liquid. So that's schita. And Rabbi Elazar holds that even when you squeeze from Erev Shabbos, so that's what he's saying, I can only bring a proof, I'm sorry, therefore, when it comes to the olives, we're trying to bring a proof that when you squeeze that squeezing olive oil or wine from grapes or olives, the case may be, that's a case of liquid from a solid. So you have to bring a proof from that. So you can't bring a proof from the honey, because that's a solid from a solid. So now we're going to say why Rav Elazar ben Pidas didn't like the other Mishnah. Rav Elazar ben Pidas would tell you, Hashem minan lei, le Rabbi Elazar, He says that Rav Elazar, I'm sorry, we're going to explain how Rav Elazar responds to this challenge. So he says that according to Rav Elazar ben Shimon Arvaisa, he says that filu zeis v'nam nami shari. So even olives and grapes would also be permitted on Shabbos itself. The ha ki asa Rav Hoshaya min Hardai. Asa va'ise masnisa bidei. So when Rav Hoshaya from Nardai came and he brought this price in his hand, and this was written in it, zeisim v'anavim shariskam be'erev Shabbos v'yatsu me'atzvam asurim from lozer of Shimon Matirin. So olives that were squeezed on Erev Shabbos and the liquids came out on Shabbos by themselves, they are forbidden. That's the Tanakama. But Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon allow the liquid that comes out of the olives or grapes on Shabbos by themselves. So we see that Rav Elazar ben Shamua, in the Braisa, that he permits even olives and grapes that the liquid comes out on Shabbos. And we're not concerned that you might squeeze them on Shabbos. And therefore, that's what he's saying, that our opinions like Beis Shammai. Nothing to do with solid and liquid. He just hold. What was our question? The question was, why? What's the support for Beis Shammai? So it's simply this. It's a different brisa. It's this brisa. It's this brisa which says what? That even olives. There's the brisa is what? Olives and grapes that you were squeezed already on Shabbos. The liquids comes out. For Lazar and Shimon say it's permitted. So what's he saying? He's saying that in any situation, as long as the olives and the grapes were squeezed on Erev Shabbos, right? Then the liquids that come out on by themselves on Shabbos, we're not concerned that you might squeeze it, and therefore you can support the opinion of Beis Shammai in our Mishnah, like Rav Elazar's position. So that's his position. Rav Yosef bar Chanina. Rav Yosef bar Chanina, who distinguishes between the honey and the olives and the grapes, Braisa lo shamila. He never heard this Braisa that Rav Elazar explicitly permits the olives and the grapes. Okay, so in other words, we initially thought that Rav Elazar had was from the Braisa with the honey. And then we brought a successful challenge, it seems. But then we had this other brisa which says Rav Elazar explicitly allows it. But Rav Yosef bar Chanina never heard this brisa. Okay. Now we're going to explain Rav Elazar ben Pedas doesn't say that Beis Shammai holds like Rav Yishmael. So Rav Elazar, my time alone with Rav Yosef bar Chanina. So why didn't Rav Elazar ben Pedas like the proof that Rav Yosef bar Chanina had, like that says that Beis Shammai holds like Rabbi Ishmael, who allows you to place the beam on Erev Shabbos on garlic or these unripened grapes that were crushed? So Amalach Labik Bar Allah Amar Rabbi Bar Chanina Rabbi Yochanan Bimechusarim Dicha. So he's saying, didn't they say that the debate between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva was only in a situation where the garlic and the unripened grapes had not been crushed, meaning to say that even though a little bit had been squeezed out, it only been crushed a little bit, but they really hadn't been crushed a lot. The chuli alma lo pligi, that really the Tanaim don't argue. That with this, even Rabbi Shmuel would say that you can't place a beam on Erev Shabbos in order so that it would finish its malacha. Ki pligi, what's their argument? Bimechusarim shchitka. They're arguing in a situation where the garlic and the grapes were already crushed very well. And basically you don't really have to crush them anymore. V'hani nami, and also the olives and the grapes that we're dealing with in our Mishnah, they are considered like they have not been fully crushed. And nevertheless, Beis Shammai allows you to place the beam on Shabbos. So it's not similar to the case of Rabbi Ishmael. Right? The case of the debate Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva is talking about where basically the grapes or the garlic was almost fully crushed. But that's not our case with the olives and the grapes. So therefore, you can't bring that as a proof. But in any case, Hora Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina ki Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina holds and practices like Rabbi Shmuel, who allows you to place the Biv and Erev Shabbos on the unripened grapes and the garlic. Now, the Gemara is now going to explain this machlokes between Rav and Shmuel when it comes to muksa, different topic. Shemen shel badadim, the oil of the people, of the owner of the olive press. What does that mean? The oil that's left at the corner of the olive press under the beam. So apparently that oil that was left there was given to the owner of the olive press as part of his payment. Umachtzalo shel badadim, and the mats of the owners of the beam that would be used to cover the olives. So Rav Asa, Rav said they're muksa. Shmuel Sharon, Shmuel thought that it was permitted, that it was not muksa. So we'll see what the basis of their debate is shortly. Hani, krache dezuze. So the mats that are used to place on top of the cover, the wares on the boat. And Rav Asar, so for this, Rav said that it was forbidden, right? It's the same issue, because they are muksa for their work. Shmuel Sharon, Shmuel said that they are permitted. And the Gemara is going to bring another debate between Rav and Shmuel when it comes to muksa. Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman said, Eiz lechelva, v'rachel legizasa, v'tarnegoles lebeitzasa, Vitore de Ridya, Vitamre de Iska. So Nachman says a goat that's waiting to be milked, and you're not using it to shech the goat, and a sheep that you're using for its wool, and a chicken that you're using it to lay eggs, and an ox that you use for plowing. And so all these animals or chickens are not meant to be shechted. That's the point. And dates that you're about to bring to a different place for business, you're going to sell. So Rav Asa, Rav says you can't use them on Shabbos or Yom Tov from a muksa standpoint. What does that mean? That you can't shecht on Yom Tov any of these animals. Why? Because at the outset of the holiday, they're designated for their work and not for shechita, not to be slaughtered. And Rav also said, therefore, you can't eat the dates on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Why? Because at the onset of Shabbos, these dates are designated to be sold for your business, and therefore you cannot eat them. Shmuel Mar Mutter, Shmuel says, no, they're permitted. You can eat these animals on Yom Tov. You can shech them. Even though this chicken is made to lay eggs, you're allowed to change your mind. They're not designated, even though it's designated, but doesn't have that halachic status of muksa, only to lay eggs. And if you want it, you can eat it on Yom Tov. And these dates, even though you designated them for schora, for business, so that's an interesting question. If something that's designated for schora, for business, or something for some other purpose, does that become muksa? V'kamiflagi, their debate between Rav and Shmuel is reflective of the bepluksa of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, who were Tanaim, they debated about this, and that we're going to see in sometime in Daf Kuf Nun Vav, in the basic foundation of muksa. That Rabbi Yehuda is stringent when it comes to these halachos, and he holds that anything that is designated for a specific purpose, that is considered muksa on Shabbos, and that's what Rav holds like. However, Rabbi Shimon is lenient when it comes to muksa, and he holds that anything that is fit to be used on Shabbos, for any use on Shabbos, a person does not maksa his das. He does not, remove his das from it, even if on Shabbos it's for a different use. In other words, a stone before Shabbos. That has no, you are maksa your das. A stone before Shabbos, you have in mind, you don't want to use the stone on Shabbos at all. It has no function for you on Shabbos whatsoever. And therefore it's muksa. But something that has a use for you, but you want to use it for one thing, as opposed to something else, so that is not considered a muksa according to Shmuel, according to Rabbi Shimon. Hahu Talmida de Ore Becharsa de argis ke Rabbi Shimon, shamte Rav Amnuna. So there was a student who taught the halacha in Charsa de argis. He said halacha like Rabbi Shimon when it comes to muksa, and Rav Amnuna put him in excommunication. B'hak Rabbi Shimon sfirulan. What's the problem? We actually hold halacha lemaisa like Rabbi Shimon. What's the problem? B'asei de Rav. Yeah, but this was Rav's town. Lo ibay lele namevet hachi. He shouldn't have followed this. I guess even though at some point we held like we said halachas like Rabbi Shimon, and at some point we said halachas like Shmuel, who followed Rabbi Shimon. At this point in time, there was no clear consensus according to the entirety of Klal Yisrael. At that point, you don't do that in Rav's town. Okay, Hani Trei Talmide. Chad, there were two students, okay, that they were, that they were debating about taking out food from a house where there was a fire. Chad matzil b'chad mano, one would basically take the food in one big kli from the house of the chatzer, but he wouldn't use multiple kelim because he thought that's an additional burden on Shabbos. V'chad, and one would be matzil ba'arba v'chamish mane. He would take four or five smaller kelim, because he was makpid to bring them into a big kli, but he would save even four or five kelim. And he would bring them from the house to the courtyard. So that is right. So you the kamiflagi bepluksa the Rava bar Zabda the Rav Huna, and they would and there's a debate between Rav Zabda, Rava bar Zabda, Rav Huna respect to this. So the question is right. Can you? Would you fold them all? Would you use one big kli, or would you have multiple kelim? So that is a debate, that we'll see in Daf Kuf Chaf about this particular halacha. So the Mishnah now says, "Ain solim basar batzel ubeitza ella kadesh yitzol mibod yom." So we don't roast meat, onions, or an egg on Erev Shabbos unless there's enough time that it should be roasted while it's still day. Right, what was the concern? The concern was, even according to Beis Hillel says, that you're allowed to start, operating something that will continue malacha being done on Shabbos, as long as you yourself don't do it. According to Beis Hillel, we hold there's no Torah prohibition of Shvisas Kalim, but the concern is that what? You might stoke the coals, you might change the temperature on Shabbos itself. So as long as the onion, the meat, or the egg is roasted while it's still day, and then even if it's roast more on Friday night, we're not concerned you're going to stoke the coals. And similarly, enosim pasatanim chashecha v'lo charar al gabi gecholim al kadei sheyikumu panam b'bodyom panam b'bodyom. We also don't place bread in an oven close to dark on Friday, late Friday, or a type of cake to bake it on coals, unless there's enough time so that the sheyikumu panam that it will get. How do you translate yikrimu?
Become crusted.
The crusty, that's right. But the crust, sorry. That it will get a little crusted while it's still daytime. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Kadesha yikrom atachton shela. That the bottom of it would get crusted. The Gemara is explaining why the bottom. We'll see that tomorrow's daf. So these halachos are even according to Beis Hillel, because they're concerned you might stoke the coals. Okay? Now, the Mishnah is going to explain a certain way that you can start to roast meat close to Shabbos. Mishal shalim es ha-pesach betanor im chashecha. You're allowed to lower the korban pesach meat in an oven on Erev Shabbos close to dark. When Erev Pesach falls on an Erev Shabbos, we're not concerned that you might stoke the coals because you're eating with a whole group of people. So they're going to remind each other not to make that mistake. And similarly, and similarly, ma'achizim es ha'orim duras beis hamokad. So the Kohanim were allowed to light an Erev Shabbos close to dark fire with a little bit of wood of that. There was a big torch, a big furnace in the Azara that's called Beis Hamokad. So this was burning by itself after dark. They would light it before dark, and it would continue burning after dark. And the Chachamim were not concerned that they would stoke the coals in order to, you know, make it light better on Shabbos, because the Kohanim were they're careful, and they would remind each other not to lead to sin. And let's just finish the Mishnah. Uvagvulim. However, in other places outside the Beis Hamikdash, you can't do that before Shabbos. You can't just start lighting a torch, lighting a furnace like a big fire, unless Kadesha Techosa or Birubo, unless most of the fire, most of the wood in the fire is already lighting before Shabbos. Amudomer Bipechamim Bikoshehu. If it has coals, so as long as you have any amount, then it will light by itself, because there typically won't go out, and we're not concerned that you will stoke the coals. Okay, that's today's daf.